Paul here with today's tip to help you pass ACLS. A short time ago, a coworker asked me, "What's the correct dose of atropine for ACLS?" The reason for their question was because they're now responding to more codes, and they heard a doctor order 0.5 milligrams in one case, while 1.0 milligrams was ordered on a similar but different patient. I explained that the dose of atropine was changed in the 2020 guidelines. Because ACLS is good for 2 years, and with COVID messing up a lot of people's classes, it's possible that some team leaders may still be ordering the 0.5 milligrams of atropine for unstable bradycardia. Atropine's new 1 milligram dose, and more about the treatment of unstable bradycardia, is today's PASS ACLS tip topic. Patients with a heart rate less than 60 are bradycardic. Because patients can generally tolerate a pulse in the 60s, for ACLS, a pulse less than 50 is generally used as an indication for us to follow the bradycardia algorithm. After obtaining vital signs, a medical history, ECG, IV, and O2 if indicated, the first question we should ask is whether the patient is stable or unstable. The signs and symptoms indicating that a patient is unstable are the same for bradycardia as tachycardia and include hypotension, generally indicated by a systolic blood pressure less than 90, a sudden decrease in level of consciousness, signs of shock, such as pale, cool, moist skin or delayed capillary refill, signs of acute CHF, and ischemic chest pain. Patients with any of these signs or symptoms should be considered unstable. 1 milligram of atropine rapid IV push is the first medication we should consider for unstable bradycardic patients. A 1 milligram dose can be repeated every 5 minutes until a total of 3 milligrams has been administered, or basically 3 1 milligram doses. The 1 milligram dose and 3 milligram maximum is for cardiac patients. Atropine's use in the treatment of other conditions may require a different dose or route and have a different or no maximum. Doses less than 0.5 milligrams or administering atropine slowly to adults can actually slow the heart, so the full dose must be given rapid IV push. Remember that atropine works by blocking parasympathetic action of the vagus nerve on the SA node. Atropine doesn't affect the AV node or the ventricles. So it may be ineffective and should be used with caution in patients with a second-degree type 2 or third-degree heart block. If you give atropine to a patient with a second or third-degree heart block and see the P wave rate increase, but not the QRSs corresponding to a pulse, then subsequent doses are likely to be ineffective, and we should consider changing to a beta-adrenergic, like a dopamine or epidrip, while preparing for transcutaneous pacing. Speaking of dopamine, the dosing of dopamine changed in the 2020 guidelines as well. The starting dose for dopamine is now 5 micrograms per kilogram per minute. When used for the treatment of unstable bradycardia, dopamine is a second-line drug to atropine and may only be needed until TCP can be initiated. When used for the treatment of hypotension, dopamine can be used longer while we attempt to identify and correct the hypotension's underlying cause. Both atropine and dopamine increase the workload of the heart and should be used with caution in patients with myocardial ischemia. At higher doses of 10 to 20 micrograms per kilogram per minute, dopamine has a vasoconstrictive effect, so we should begin our infusion at 5 micrograms per kilogram per minute and slowly titrate up only until we have improvement, usually indicated by a systolic blood pressure of 90 or more. We should not administer dopamine at more than 20 micrograms per kilogram per minute. If we get to that high of a dose and the patient's condition hasn't improved, a different medication such as Levofed should be considered. That about covers the 2020 changes to atropine and dopamine. If you'd like more information about the use of atropine, dopamine, and pacing for unstable bradycardic patients, check out the pod resource page at passacls.com, where I've posted a link to another podcast that's intended for emergency physicians. Most of what they discuss follows the ACLS guidelines. They also go beyond provider-level ACLS and into some more advanced discussions like would be covered in an ACLS-experienced provider class. Links to PassACLS.com, Twitter, and to my breast cancer fundraiser for the American Cancer Society are available in the episode notes. Check them out, say hi, and consider supporting the American Cancer Society's battle against breast cancer. I'm here to help you pass ACLS. Thanks for listening, and good luck with your class.